We look ahead to 2023, a state budget, political maneuvering, plus abortion, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 30th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, we look ahead to the 2023 budget session. Governor Eric Holcomb says the new state revenue forecast is rosier than he anticipated, but he says it still calls for a discerning approach to writing the new state budget. The forecast projects lawmakers will have about $600 million per year in new money for the next state budget. That sounds like a lot, but just a 2% increase in K-12 funding alone is at least $160 million per year. Now, add on the new initiatives Governor Holcomb is proposing. Public health spending that costs $130 million just in the first year. Another round of ready economic development grants. State employee pay increases. That $600 million in new spending disappears fast. And Holcomb says it requires responsible budgeting.
At the same time, trying to fund some proven programs, be it in education or workforce development.
There will be another revenue forecast in April that will give budget writers an updated picture of how much money they'll have to spend over the next 2 years. How cautious will lawmakers be when writing the new budget? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, can we judge on the budget? How cautious can lawmakers afford to be when Hoosiers are looking at all that money?
They are way too cautious. I mean, it is projected now that at the end of this fiscal year, in June of 2023, we will have taken in $2.3 billion more than we've spent. And now they're projecting another $320 million on top of that. We have needs out there. You know, they keep talking about cutting taxes, and it's shown over and over and over again that when you want businesses to come here, they want to look at the quality of life. They want to look at what the educational system's like. How affordable is higher education? What's the healthcare system like in this state? All the needs.
Because it's about getting workers to come here, too.
Not just businesses, but housing, another issue. Yeah. All of these issues have been simmering or actually bubbling up for all the last 20 years under Republican rule, and they don't have the vision to deal with any of them. Healthcare, we're at the bottom in terms of healthy population. And what do we do about it? We talk about it. We come out with a program that says this is the minimum of what we have to do, and then we're saying we need to be cautious. We don't need to be cautious. We need to think ahead. We need to build this state to provide opportunity for the people living here and the people we want to migrate here. And under Republican leadership, that's not happening.
It's not just Democrats who are calling for a lot of these things. I mean, it's, you know, the governor's public health commissioner that's saying we need to spend on public health. It's Republicans as much as Democrats who are saying we need housing solutions. You know, there's always the K-12 education. We need more money in that. But also higher education. There's a recognition that whatever that looks like, whether it's four-year universities and four-year degrees or apprenticeships, certificates, whatever it is, we clearly need more people doing that than we currently have. Is all of this coming to a critical mass?
Well, I think when you do that and you kind of tick through and go, we need this, and the budget guys go, that's a really long list, and it's a little bit more money, you know? And so I think that's what drives the caution. I was at the State House last week, and the joke, this is a made-up number, but the joke was, I think we've hit $10 billion in legislator requests, much less agency requests, right? So all these, you know, you have 150 lawmakers, all of these state agencies, not to mention the impact inflation has had on the capital projects that are already in the pipeline, that they're having, and ones that are in the middle of being built that they've got to go put more money into because
everything's costing.
They're running out of. They're over budget, and so these are big numbers, and they're. But governing's about prioritizing, right? So, like, the governor has made public health a priority this session, and we've known that has been coming for a long time. And so there's going to have to be a hard push to make that the legislature's priority because they're the ones who are ultimately going to have to make sure that $400 million is assigned to that. But we talk about $1.2 billion or $2.8 billion, and you start ticking through the needs, and you swallow up that money pretty fast, and it better be ongoing money if you're going to keep doing things, if you're going to add to the bottom line.
I pitched this question to the governor when I talked to him, which was, given how much money we're projected to have, and we'll know more in April, but given how much more money we're projected to have, and that long list of things that everybody wants, does it feel a little like one of those years where nobody gets everything, but everybody gets something? He thinks it is a little bit. Is that what we're shaping up for in 2023?
Probably, because that's the nature of the game. You want people have constituencies that, and stakeholder groups that would rather have something than nothing.
Even and though there's that, still enough money, even though that may not be, to say no to
everything. But then that may not be the best recipe for the kinds of advances, profound advances that the state really needs in terms of public health, in terms of the well-being of our population and the quality of life here. But this is an elective body where people tend to want to please constituencies, so I think it is more likely to be spread out. In fairness, I can't think of any governor, Republican or Democrat, whoever at this point in the year after seeing the initial forecast has said, hot diggity, we're spending every last penny. We're finally, our ship has come in. Even in the rosiest of years, I mean, this is politics 101. It's the beginning of the process. You set the expectations low so that you can deliver. If you leave everybody right now thinking, we're going to solve all our health problems, we're going to end smoking, we're going to end our mental health crisis, we're going to have housing for everybody,
but
guess what? Everybody goes away disappointed.
But you don't hide the money away in 50, 100 million increments.
Or give
like
it away,
this.
As was the case last year. Give it back, I should say.
But they're hiding it away. They're putting it $500 million for that project up in Lebanon that's not...
I don't know if that's hiding it, but...
Yeah, it is, actually, because you don't even know if that's going to be built, much less bonded. And on top of that, they can't act because they don't think government ought to function.
Well,
that's the problem.
I agree with you on that.
Mike just said, and this is true, budgeting is about priorities. And we're setting up for a budget that if the April forecast looks roughly the same as this December one did, there's going to be enough money that we have to do stuff, but not enough that we can absolutely, the last budget where we did everything we wanted to do and more because of all the federal money. Is that going to make for a very difficult budget for the House and Senate to figure out how to write, and the governor to figure out how to write between them?
Yeah, especially if you have Republicans in the Senate, for instance, they continue to be, I don't want to use, kind of obsessed with this whole pay down the pension thing.
Obsessed with it.
You know, and it's like at some point, keeping paying down pension and other obligations, doesn't help where we are now. And yeah, great, maybe 20 years from now we could spend $1 billion more, but by then they would have cut taxes, so then we can't spend $1 billion more. So, I mean, and also you mentioned the capital projects. There was no discussion at all, like it used to be when a capital project came in over, well, maybe we need to relook at the scope of it. Do we need that full capital project, or can we bond, like Ann mentioned? So they're going to have to look into some different options than just, what they've done the last couple of years.
Well, 2023... we'll include plenty of talk about 2024 when it comes to elections. Now, Eric Holcomb is term limited from another run as governor, leaving that seat open. Three Republicans have already thrown their hats into the ring: U.S. Senator Mike Braun, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and Fort Wayne businessman Eric Doden. The GOP primary will likely be expensive. Crouch said she'll end the year with about $3 million in her campaign account. Doden, who's been in the race since last May, has already compiled more than $2 million, and Braun has about $1 million in his U.S. Senate campaign account. The Democratic field is less clear, though former State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick, who served in that office as a Republican, has strongly indicated she'll make a bid. Other rumored candidates include former State Representative Christina Hale, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott, and former U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly.
Mike O'Brien, Republicans are getting in this race early. Do Democrats need to join them soon?
Yeah, the losses are adding up. And not only do they need to get in soon, they need a quality candidate. Not to disparage the laundry list that we just saw, but this has always been. It tends to be a late exercise. It tends to be a question mark for Democrats in Indiana on who's going to run for not just governor but these other offices, and sometimes that comes really late in the cycle.
Now, they did better at that in 2022.
Yeah. They did, yeah.
They had a great slate of candidates, who ultimately still lost.
But the sooner the better when you're staring down, you know, 24 years and not holding that office.
Yeah, this race has started a lot sooner than it normally does. I mean, certainly you had Eric Doden, who was out there a year and a half ago. But if you don't count how early that was, even December, I mean, nearly 2 years away is way earlier than we normally see that. Mm-hmm. But is this the new normal in politics?
I don't think so. I think people get tired. We just finished an election where you were bombarded nightly with that, not necessarily for Indiana, but as you were for the national races, Pennsylvania and Georgia and Arizona and the like. So I think there's an election fatigue, and we need to get through this session before we talk about a Democratic candidate for governor. But this is the same kind of merry-go-round I talked about before. We just move the same candidates around. They're term limited here, or we'll move them there, or we'll move this guy there.
This from the party of
or we'll have
the Democrats have
them to move around. They're all mediocre. None of them have any ideas about what to do, but they get elected. That's true.
On the governor's race, does it feel like we're, at least on the Republican side, does it feel like we're starting to get a picture of exactly what that race is going to be like, or are there still surprises
to come? I think
a
few people might still get in. I honestly don't understand this whole starting out early. I looked back at recent. It's usually May or June before people start popping in. And also, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and that's what I was going to get to. Yeah. There's a law that you can't raise money during a budget session. So all these people are getting in, and then what do you do for 4 months?
It does feel like anymore, like when you're in that, and other people are it all starts with one person getting in. And then if you're on that list and you're getting in, it just feels like you're burning time and you're falling behind, further and further behind. So that Doden was in, he got in well ahead of like being in cycle last time. But once you're in cycle, it's like, forget it. I mean, I know what you're saying, and there is fatigue, but it's not. This is an endless campaign cycle.
But Sparks just got elected. They're not even sworn in yet.
Well, that's the Senate race, which we'll talk about in a second. But John, on the governor's race,
that's not unique to here or unique to Republicans. Well, we are in an endless election cycle.
Given, to that point, and also, I don't know that you'll be seeing. You're not going to see Mike Braun and Suzanne Crouch necessarily spending money on ads.
Right.
This far ahead of time, so the fatigue such as that it might exist would only be among the people who are super plugged in anyway, so that's probably not going to have too bad of an
effect. I think that may be true. A lot of it will happen outside the public's attention with grassroots organizing and with fundraising once the General Assembly notwithstanding. If you're a Democrat wanting to get into this race, and I think we just sort of answered this by saying there won't be a lot of advertising right now, to the extent that this battle among Republicans gets bloody and they start tearing each other apart, unlikely. But if they do, and they really start eroding the numbers as negative campaigning tends to do, one against another, well, then if you're the Democrat, you probably have some luxury of sitting back and sort of enjoying the show.
Yeah.
If, in fact, it's just simple name ID and they're out there traveling all 92 counties and they're doing these positive autobiographical spots about how great they are, well, then that's a different matter.
It doesn't matter. If they're not on television, it didn't happen.
No. The 2024 governor's race is having an effect on the U.S. Senate race in 2024. With Braun running for governor, it opens up his seat in that election.
The Republican Senate primary, like the governor's race, is expected to be contentious. U.S. Representatives Jim Banks and Victoria Spartz have already publicly announced that they're considering running for Senate and will decide sometime early in 2023. There's speculation Governor Eric Holcomb could run for the seat. Holcomb has said he'll hold off on any announcement about his future until after the 2023 legislative session.
Nikki Kelly, which race will be tighter, the GOP primary for governor or the GOP primary for U.S. Senate?
I'm going to go with Senate. I'm not sure exactly why. It's like a gut feeling. I just feel like there are going to be more people go for the Senate seat than the governor's seat. And I think, and I'm not really sure where we go, because if enough people sort of on one spectrum fight it out amongst themselves, that would open up for other candidates. So I'm going to go with the Senate.
To the point Nikki just made, you know, in the governor's race so far, you have Eric Doden, who can kind of pitch himself as the political outsider. You know, he's worked on economic development. Suzanne Crouch, obviously, theoretically more of the Holcomb wing of the Republican Party angle. Mike Braun, somewhere in between that, a little more far right than he was when he was running in 2018, but also can't pitch the political outsider angle anymore. So, but in the Senate race, if it's Jim Banks and Victoria Spartz,
there's a lot of room.
They're pretty far to the right, and there's this huge gap between them where somebody could step up, and it might be
multiple.
I'm not
sure if that's between them or to the left of them.
Or to the left of them, to the left of them, such as that exists in the Republican Party. I mean, seriously, I mean, are we going to get a lot more people who might look at that one?
I think there will, not only because of that. Yes, you have the sort of carving up the ideological space. That is a consideration. But also, just the fact when a U.S. Senate seat opens, let's look at the numbers. Governor's office, you get 4 years. Senate, you get six. And you can serve as many terms as you can win election to, unlike the governor's office where you're term limited at 2 terms. So there's a certain rarity attached to a U.S. Senate seat that I think by... There's that sense.
Tell that to Mike Braun.
There's that sense of.
He always said no more than two terms.
The sense of better job.
He only served one.
And he was only serving one.
Okay.
Well, he
would say he wants to be an executive, not just a board member.
Somebody didn't tell him what that was like before he ran.
Well, generally, I think he's an outlier. Most people probably would gravitate toward the Senate. And it's a coveted spot. Who wouldn't want to? And when you have an open seat, you think it's now or never. So I think
right.
We'll have a
Todd Young's not going anywhere if he doesn't want to, it would certainly seem like. So this is your shot. How big is that race going to get? The one name we haven't brought up for the Senate race
is Mitch Daniels, who in a recent poll that was released had a huge lead on the field.
On the theoretical field.
So I think you got to wait and see what he does, right? Next several months, just see what. I hope he reinserts himself in the political conversation anywhere, much less as a candidate. So I think a lot of the size of that race and the cost of that race depends on what he does.
Is this the Mitch Daniels return to politics?
Mitch Daniels has to get the nomination of the Republican Party. I'm not sure the Republican Party in Indiana is the same as it was when Mitch Daniels was governor.
It's not.
I think it's
not.
Way
different. We don't have to speculate about that.
It is not the same, but can he still win?
I don't know about that. I mean, he's going to have to come out and take some very hard, very right-wing positions on things. He may not be entirely comfortable with that. So, you know, he's probably... going to have to think long and hard, because going into that and losing a primary would be pretty darn embarrassing for him.
Yeah, in terms of that legacy. And also,
he probably knows his street address, though. That's why he tripped up Evan Bayh in 16. He didn't know
it's a good day. The only other thing I'll say about Mitch Daniels for Senate is it feels a little like Mike Braun, in that Mike Braun has spent his career as an executive. That's what Mitch Daniels has done. Will he be happy being
a voice?
Even a popular one out of 100.
I think in the period we're in now, yes.
Yeah.
He does ultimately have a sense of obligation to service.
He and Todd Young would be, I mean,
tremendous.
But they'd have to be bipartisan. He'd have to be bipartisan.
I mean, you also
Todd Young has been bipartisan.
But Todd Young's in.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not running.
I'm not sure, though, he would have the same sense. I could be wrong. Of missed, I must have this to sort of round out my legacy. He already has a resume that kicked the butt of anybody else, you know, probably.
You would
who
think
might.
If he did get it, it would be more of a one-term kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at his age, certainly, anyway, yeah. All right. After passing a near-total abortion ban in 2022, Republican legislative leaders say they'll likely avoid the issue in 2023.
Ultra-conservative lawmakers and advocates were unhappy with some of the exceptions in Indiana's near-total ban, particularly allowing abortions in some cases of rape or incest, and they've indicated they'll work to remove those exceptions going forward. But House Speaker Todd Huston and Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray have both said they plan to stand pat on abortion in 2023. Bray noted that the Indiana Supreme Court is currently considering whether the ban is even constitutional.
John Schwannes, if the state Supreme Court rules on the ban before the General Assembly ends its session, are all bets off?
I think all bets are off anyway. I mean, this issue is so polarizing, and so there's such a disparate set of views on it that you will, even though, yes, leadership doesn't want to address it, there will be those who feel compelled to address it. And there will be folks on the other side of the aisle wanting to see that happen, so then it can basically stir the pot and create that sort of contrast between the two. We've talked before about Democrats maybe in Indiana not getting the full benefit quote unquote, benefit of sort of the backlash against Roe, because the decision overturning Roe, because it's been essentially stayed.
It's halted by the courts and all that.
And yeah. So I'm sure there is a faction of the Democratic caucus that would say, bring on those more draconian measures. We'd love to debate that.
Yeah.
And you're right. Once we get past this issue before the state Supreme Court on the constitutionality, we still need to deal with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
So there's two shots for the Supreme Court to knock this down. But here's the thing that gets me about, I get leadership saying they don't want to deal with it, but it raises the question of what will the membership of the House and the Senate want to do. We know, we got a pretty good look at where lawmakers stood on taking away the exceptions for rape and incest, because that's the biggest shift, I think, that we'll try to see happen. It was 31% in the House and 31% in the Senate. Now, the membership has changed somewhat, but not that dramatically.
Well, so, in some ways, it's gotten more moderate.
A little bit.
Well, the guy who's motivating that, Curt Nisley and Jeff
Dagan, That's true. Right? In the House, certainly. Isn't this just where we are in the General Assembly? The bill they got is the only one that could pass both chambers.
I think so, generally. I think if we're going to see anything, we're going to see stuff more around the periphery of the issue. For instance, one of the issues they didn't even talk about during the special session was how to deal with the medication-induced, like, actually whether Hoosiers can buy that medication and basically induce their own abortions at home. That's an area that some other states have tackled. We might see more on the contraception section. So I think, if anything, we'll see stuff kind of around the edges that we didn't discuss in the special session, but they would leave the sort of base ban alone.
Legislative leaders, Republican legislative leaders say, we're good for the 2023 session. Will that be true by the time they get to April?
You know, the Supreme Court, in the last time they dealt with this on the 18-hour rule for the abortion, specifically said, we are not determining whether there's a right to abortion under the Liberty Clause in the Indiana State Constitution. We are not deciding that. Okay.
Because they didn't have to.
They
because
didn't
at the
have
time,
to. Well,
federal law.
They could have taken a page out of the U.S. Supreme Court's book, though, and they could have done it anyway. But they didn't do that. And so there's a substantial possibility that they will find a right under the Constitution to have an abortion. If that's the case, then all of the Republican caucus is going to raise up in arms, and they're going to propose legislation, again, as poorly drafted as the stuff they passed, again, without any consideration for all the nonsense they have in the code already. So it could be a very contentious session, because that could get to the Supreme Court pretty quickly. I mean, it is going to get to the Supreme Court,
yes.
Certainly ahead of RFRA. And then that comes on the heels. So I'm not sure that the legislative leaders can stop it.
I'm going to go back to the question I asked John with you, which is, let's say the Supreme Court rules that the abortion ban was okay, that there is no right to an abortion in the Liberty Clause of the Indiana Constitution. Now, there is still the RFRA case out there, but if the Supreme Court says this is fine, that maybe tells us a little something about the RFRA case. At that point, are legislative leaders going to be able to stop their members from going further if that's
if they uphold it?
Yeah.
And so abortion is effectively banned in Indiana from that point on?
Yes.
No, I think it gives them the perfect reason to stay on the course they want to stay on, which is to not consider further changes, because the policy argument is the Supreme Court is allowing this to go move forward. Let's see what happens and where we need to maybe clean up, you know, the statute in the future. I think if they decide there is a right, or if they stop short of saying that there's a right, and they say for whatever reason this statute
and
goes too far,
and then
we effectively have no ban that to any degree in Indiana. I can see a scenario where they do come back, but come back with, you know, like Kyle Walker plan, which is 15 weeks, right, or some other moderated limitation that's more acceptable. You know, to the public,
I think that's more likely than a more draconian. I mean, not that there won't be people who want to see the more draconian within the caucus, but I think if there is any change, if there's a mulligan here, it would be a less stringent.
Dream on.
I'll say this. Todd Houston was asked if they were going to tackle contraception in the 2023 session by Indiana Capital Chronicle reporter Leslie Bonilla Munoz, and he said yes. And then she had to ask, in which direction? And he said making it more available. So we might see something like that.
I was going to clarify that for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. He acknowledged that was something he didn't need to clarify. Yeah. Well, finally, it's that time of year when people are making New Year's resolutions. So, Michael Bryan, what should Indiana's New Year's resolution be?
Well, in the context of what we've just talked about, we have had a heck of a contentious run in the State House. I'm looking forward to a normal session where we just fight about normal things like casinos and alcohol and taxes and none of this other stuff.
New Year's resolution for Indiana?
I would like to see all of Indiana's mayors who are up for election next year urge people to register and get out to vote. There's been so many attacks on the integrity of the electoral system. I want to see confidence rebuilt in that system, and I want to see the mayors take the lead in getting that done.
Yeah, some nice turnout in a municipal election year
would be a first. We ought to have them in the gubernatorial years.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have people voting in 2024, I suspect.
No, but I think we ought to have the municipal in the gubernatorial
years. Yeah, I agree. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week and this year. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Have a great new year. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.